TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Rumpelstiltskin. Matthew Rushing. Sorry about that, Matthew.
Well, great. Now everybody who's listening to this knows my name. Ugh, you're the worst, Chris. I knew I couldn't trust you with my name.
Well, it's a good thing you don't make deals like that anymore. You would have just disappeared and I'd have to do this whole episode by myself.
Well, I mean, if that was the case, it would have been like, Lando Calrissian, because this deal just keeps getting worse all the time.
Exactly. All right, everyone. We are going to continue our 30th anniversary Deep Space Nine rewatch today with episode 15 of season one, at least if you're counting Emissary as one, as I do. It's If Wishes Were Horses. And here is a quick rundown of the episode. Bedtime stories are supposed to be fun, but one gets a bit too real for Molly O'Brien when the straw-spinning imp Rumpelstiltskin shows up in her room. Not the kind of visitor you want as a firstborn child. But that's just the start of a surprising evening for the crew of Deep Space Nine. London Kings baseball legend Buck Bokai pays a visit to Captain Sisko, and Dr. Bashir finds himself in bed with Jadzia Dax just hours after being rejected over dinner. The weirdness continues to grow until the station and the entire Bajoran system becomes threatened by a spatial rift. As the crew races the clock to find a solution, Sisko realizes that both the problem and the solution lie in their imaginations. So, Matthew, as we jump into talking about this, I'm just reminded of a comment that Ira Stephen Bear made one time about this episode. He said, "This is an episode you've got to try and do. We should be awarded brass balls for doing Rumpelstiltskin. It's an interesting show, and it has a high level of imagination, and it's a high concept. Sometimes they work, and sometimes they don't." So that's the question, right? Did this one work for you?
Well, I mean, I'm just surprised that they didn't change the name of the show after this to Imagination Station.
And then they make the move to PBS.
Exactly. I think the most interesting thing about this episode is the way in which the reveal at the end, I think, ameliorates a lot of the things where you're like, oh, this kind of feels like a lot of other stuff I've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
You think back to Shore Leave and, you know, that's this thing where they don't realize that the pleasure planet is there just to make their wishes come true so they can have a good time. And the beauty of this, too, is that it's a humorous episode as well with the first contact that you get with the aliens and everything. And so I think, and I'm probably biased because I have a bit of a interesting story with this episode because This is one when my sister and I were watching Deep Space Nine, we always seemed to miss in the rerun cycle. Mm-hmm. And so we really wanted to see, you know, If Wishes Were Horses, because It was like If Wishes Were Unicorns, because it was the lost unicorn we could never actually catch. And we finally saw it, of course, it was a lot of fun. But I think, to me, this is just one of those episodes of Deep Space Nine that is enjoyable to watch from start to finish. And part of that is getting to see all the different characters. You know, we've gotten to spend some time with them now. And so we kind of get a chance to see them break out just a little bit. But really, what this kind of does in some ways, especially for Sisko and Bashir, and I think Dax, is it gives us an opportunity to kind of get into their heads a little bit and kind of see what makes them tick. And I found that to be really enjoyable then, and I still find it enjoyable now.
Yeah, I have a similar story to that of you and your sister when it comes to this episode, which is that in 1993, heading in the summer, I went and I spent 3 months living in Russia. And this came on like right after I left, and I didn't get to see it when it first aired. And like you say, back then, we didn't have Netflix, we didn't have DVD collections of Star Trek. And so it was just this game of when's it going to come back around in a rerun, when I'll be able to catch it. And so it was years actually before I saw If Wishes for Horses. And I had the same feeling of it's this magical episode. If I can catch it, that'd be great. I can finally watch it, right? And so I also have this sort of kind of like a special relationship with this particular episode. And the fact that it turns out to be a fun one has helped make it one of the episodes that people would be surprised to know that I've watched over and over and over far more times than anyone probably should. But yeah, it's that idea of is it different from what we've seen before that's similar to the story? Is it familiar or does it have a twist? Is one thing that I think about a lot with this episode, because today when you go back and rewatch it, you've got all the baggage of all of these years of Star Trek, all these seasons, because you've got all the rest of DS9. You've still got more to go on the Next Generation. I was thinking about episodes where crew members act weird or they get possessed, something happens, and Masks crossed my mind when Brent Spiner gets to play all the different characters as Data. But actually that episode comes after this one. That episode is a year, almost a year later after this. So even all that stuff that happens on the Next Generation hasn't come yet.
Right.
And then of course you got Voyager, you got Enterprise, Observer Effect, things like that. And so it's hard to separate that in your mind. And then you watch this today and you think, oh, it's just so familiar. God, they do this kind of story all the time. But at the time, they had done it a handful of times, but not as many as we feel. And so it's not so much a rehash as it is taking a familiar idea. But then I do think they put a twist on it because, as we'll talk about later, it has this whole first contact element to it in addition to just the idea that something weird is happening with the crew.
Well, and I think that's one of the things, too, for as much, you know, techno babble as the show has, for it to then turn out to have another reason for this happening other than just some random, you know, occurrence in space happening, I thought was a lot more fun. And again, it really does, you know, when you're playing with an alien species like this, you know, the sky's the limit with what you can do, because you really can shoot for the moon, right? You really can, you know, kind of play around with things and kind of do things that you wouldn't do otherwise. And I mean, I think that's what makes this so much fun, because it is one of those places that kind of explores the human condition, which is, as we were kind of joking at the beginning, imagination, right? And and what makes humanity in some ways special. I mean, they even make the joke in the episode that the Vulcans running across this phenomena, and Bashir's like, well, I mean, they're not really known for their imaginations, you know. And so, I mean, I think that's one of the things that helps this episode to kind of play out really well. And again, I mean, by getting a peek into the imaginations. I mean, we even get a peek into Odo's imagination, mm-hmm. right? Which is that he gets a chance to lock up Quark in a cell. And so, I mean, everybody kind of gets, or, you know, Akira's imagination immediately goes to, you know, something dramatic and drastic happening, which makes sense. And so, or Jake imagining his dad and what his dad would say if he was there, which is just a such great interplay between the two actors there. And so I think all of that is so, so interesting. And I mean, in all honesty, can we talk a little bit about the fact that I think O'Brien and his fear of magical creatures, there is some interesting psychosis there or something going on. I mean, like, and he's talking about how he's not afraid of these things. And so, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff in here, just really interesting.
Well, the thing with O'Brien is interesting because apparently there, maybe in an early stage of the draft, they had talked about having a leprechaun, and Colm Meaney didn't like that idea because it would have maybe seemed a bit stereotypical to have an Irishman and a leprechaun, and so they went with Rumpelstiltskin, which I think makes a whole lot more sense in the first place to do that. And, you know, he does look a bit like a leprechaun, but he's not. He's kind of like a magical imp, as I said in the opening. So yeah, there is that. Also, you mentioned, this just popped in my head when you were talking. I never have pictured this before. It would have been funny if there had been a sequence where we see Quark and he's at the bar and Morn is just rambling on and on and on and on about something and he won't shut up. And then suddenly it snaps out of it. You realize that that's in Quark's imagination as well.
That would be great. I mean, you know, the fun of this episode is that, and I think this is important in Star Trek, and it's something that, you know, we learned in the original series where they would do this every once in a while, like a shore leave or something like a piece of the action, where it is okay to have fun. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, this is one of the things that sometimes Star Trek can miss. You know, I think it's one of the things that kind of got missed in some of the newer Star Trek is that things can be fun and light. It's one of the things I think, you know, even in the first season of and of course they did it in the second season too of Strange New Worlds, where not every episode had to be dour or dark or, you know, dealing with the end of the universe, right? And so I think that's something that is really on display in this episode, and it makes it a lot of fun. And I think too, it also shows us, and this is the strange side of this episode, when we're talking about, you know, reality and the way our imaginations can run away with us, there is the danger of having our imaginations run away with us. In some ways that can get us into a lot of as much trouble as not having any imagination at all. And so that there has to be a balance there. And I think that's something that I kind of like about this episode, because, you know, their imaginations almost caused the destruction of the Bajoran sector, right? And or at least we think they're going to. So, you know, I just it's just such a fun episode. I don't know. It's weird to watch it all these years later and still get a kick out of watching it.
Well, one thing watching it all these years later that struck me this time, because of the climate that the world is in at the moment, that it shows how we often talk about on the Orb how, and fans in general talk about online, about how Deep Space Nine continues to be so relevant as the decades go by, perhaps more so than any other Star Trek series, and sometimes in ways that weren't intended, but they've come to be the case. And what you're mentioning right there is one of them, where near the end, when Sisko realizes that this is just in their imagination, he tells Jadzia, continue your analysis, Dax, but this time no speculations, just facts. And that struck me watching this time in a world where facts don't seem to matter anymore. And whatever people think, whatever people believe, that becomes the reality for them, which is what's happening in this episode. And it just struck me, the fact that he used the words just facts.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Yeah, but just keeping in mind the facts of something can prevent, how do I want to say this? Because this is going to tie into another thing we have on our discussion outline. Just keeping the facts in mind, it does have an impact on how you see the world and which direction mm-hmm. your reality actually right. goes. Maybe not for the whole world, but for you as individuals, which is what is happening in this episode. And that comes to the idea that I did have over the years watching this episode over and over. And that is that in the story, it feels like reality is some sort of substance that can be molded. Like if there were a scientific theory, take Einstein, you know, when Einstein realized that space-time was malleable, that how fast you travel actually affects the passage of time. It's and the gravitational fields of planets actually warp space-time. Something that we thought was static and unchangeable is actually malleable. And in this story, it's like reality itself is malleable in that way.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, because as you were talking about the idea of facts, I was also thinking mm-hmm. about, you know, one of the things that helps humanity discover things is our ability for imagination, mm-hmm. right? And then those things that we imagine become reality, you mm-hmm. know? So you think of all the way back when Leonardo is looking at trying to create some sort of flying machine so men can fly. You think about all of the things in science fiction that have now become science fact. And many of the things that we even saw in Star Trek have become reality. You know, mm-hmm. we have the right now we are talking across the planet on a video conferencing that looks just like Star Trek did, you know?
Yep.
And the same thing happens, you know, with our cell phones and our pads, you know, our iPads. I mean,
actually, ours are better because they're multi-use. Yeah, we can put more than one book on a pad.
It's very true. you know, and so I think it is such a testament to this episode that it's touching at some things that are incredibly human. And it also goes to show, like you were talking about, you have to find the balance between what is fact and what is fiction, and be careful not to mix the two. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's something that's really interesting about the episode, is finding their place and the right way in which our imaginations can further us in good ways mm-hmm. or in bad ways. And so in all of these things, I do think that this episode, and it does it in such a humorous way, right? You could just watch the episode, not think about any of these ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
And still completely enjoy it, and which is perfect. But at the same time, I do think you can, you know, begin to peel back the layers here of reality and just kind of see some of the things to which I think the episode is pointing at. And that's one of the things that you and I have always appreciated, I think, about Deep Space Nine more than any other Star Trek show, because it feels like more often than not, an episode does have more than one layer that it's working on. Even an episode as silly as If Wishes Were Horses.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about some of the things that happens on the station to the characters, we talked about characters a little bit earlier. And in the case of, you know, Julian and Jadzia, this is a case where, of course, Jadzia says something to Julian that I think is important, where she says that, well, he's embarrassed, and she says, I feel like we invaded your privacy. You know, there are some thoughts that people have that should remain private, but it also, in terms of him still pursuing her. This is still, well, it's, what are we, about two-thirds of the way through season one at this point, right? There are 20 episodes in season one. It seems like the writers are still playing with that idea. Are Julian and Jadzia going to become an item or not? Is that where we're going to go with this or not? So just on that point, what did you think about the Jadzia-Julian element of the story?
You know what's so interesting about this is the way in which they pick up on this thread, you know, of course, later on in the series. And I think it's evident here in some ways that Jadzia doesn't mind the attention. She doesn't mind the fact that Bashir is pursuing her. But you can clearly tell, too, at this point, she is not interested necessarily in pursuing the romantic relationship with Julian. And I think the answer kind of comes in this episode. It's because Julian is doing it half-heartedly. In fact, in many ways, Julian is just basically looking for anyone who's pretty. And I think that's kind of the thing that, as we moved through the series, you know, that if Worf had not come along, it would have been Julian. But why is that the case? Because Julian is going to grow as a character.
Yeah.
And he's going to mature as a character to the point where Jadzia, I think, could actually see herself being with him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes this so interesting, right? And there's the beautiful then juxtaposition between these two characters of one who has lived many lifetimes and the one who is still just living the one lifetime. And in that lifetime, it's very young. And so I was just really struck with this this time watching it and really being amazed at the way in which, look, the writers have no idea where they're going with this. Mm-hmm. But as they continue on, they just continue to place building blocks in all of these characters' relationships, especially the Julian and Jadzia relationship. And I think that that makes it really, really interesting because they never let go of that. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, they make it something in the end, which makes it, I think, very interesting. And it just goes to show that they didn't leave a lot of loose threads with this series, because they were continually kind of pulling at the ones. And in the end, what they do is they create an incredible tapestry for us. They give us an incredible, I think, quilt of goodness, which is what this show really just ends up becoming. And so I don't know, how did you take it, especially since I think there is a way in which I could see people not responding well to the storyline these days.
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, with Julian and Jadzia, I think they become much more compatible characters as the series goes on. Because as Julian matures and his scientific expertise, medical expertise, rise more to the surface, he becomes more compatible with Jadzia's scientific mind and her, you know, centuries of knowledge as a Trill. At this point, it does feel like, yeah, he's in the wilderness, as he says in the first episode, and maybe he's looking for whatever girls are around. But at the same time, she lists a number of girls when they're having dinner. And he says, oh, a poor substitute for you. And of course, you could read that as him just, you know, brushing them off. But I think already at this point, one reason he's attracted to her in particular isn't just that she's beautiful, but she is scientifically minded, as he is as a doctor. She's very smart, very wise. And I think that is attractive to him at this point, even if the character isn't being portrayed and written that way so much yet. So in the story itself, when she first shows up in his bed, he is like, what's going on? No, what's going on? And then he says, why am I fighting this? Right. So I think his initial reaction is the truth of how he really feels, and the rest of it is maybe a bit of a show. And another thing is, now in the writing also, there's the whole talk about her being submissive and Julian wanting Dax to be submissive. And we talked about this episode on the Ready Room about 10 years ago. And my co-host on that episode was Megan Calcote, who was a co-host on the show Educating Geeks, which I think hasn't been around in a long time, but it was a really great show with all ladies as the hosts. And she had a very interesting take on it. She said that actually the writing here, while they talk about being submissive, her take on it was Jadzia is not being submissive. She's actually being aggressive in this case. And I think that actually is the probably accurate reading of what she's doing, at least in that scene. Now, later when they have her kind of like cowering next to him, like he's going to protect her, that's a bit of a different take and maybe a stereotypical take of women during that time when this was being written. But I think the writing is a bit kind of mixed up here, both in what they're saying, in how Julian views Jadzia, and then also in how it's being portrayed by Terry Farrell. I think it's all a bit of a bit mixed up here. In fact, I started saying reality, but we're talking about an episode in which reality itself is all mixed up.
You forget, we're on the imagination station.
We're on the imagination station. So. Yeah. But anyway, that was a lot of rambling there from me on that topic. But I think this element of the story can be interpreted in different ways, and I think that it's often misunderstood.
Right. Well, and I do think, too, and I think that every single person is guilty of this, right, is that there is an incorrect picture of whoever is the object of our fantasy, and that fantasy aligns perfectly at any moment with the thing that we would want from them. And so I think that's the, if there's any inconsistency in this, it's just that it goes to show how fickle we are, I think, as human beings. And we really don't know what we want. And of course, we wouldn't want anybody to just be like that. And in fact, you know, I think the most interesting part of this is that once Julian's confronted with the fact that this is not Dax, I mean, I think he's kind of embarrassed. And I think he is embarrassed that in any way that he would kind of think of Dax in this way, as opposed to, you know, who she really is. Because I think you're right. In the end, he's attracted to Dax for all the reasons that that she's already portrayed, which is she's her own person. She's not easy to get. She's incredibly intelligent. She doesn't need him. And so, of course, the desire then is for her to want him, you know? So it's like there's all this stuff going on. So I do think that makes it incredibly interesting. And on the other side of this, I think the beauty of what we get with the Cisco and the baseball storyline, we see the ability of humanity to have a deep affinity and love for something that not everybody does, you know? And I think for the longest time, you know, in some ways, Cisco's storyline was kind of akin to geeks in general. We loved the things that not everybody loved, right? You know, people forget now that we live in the culture where all geekdom is completely accepted and everybody's geeky because they all like the same stuff now. Like back when this show came out and this episode was happening, dude, if you were watching Star Trek, people were like, nerd.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so Cisco's love of baseball, something that had kind of died out and only has a minor resurgence at this point in galactic history, or at least in human history, is incredibly interesting because it shows the way in which we as humans can be devoted to and love things that not everybody else does. And when we find the people then that do, we're like, oh, you're one of those people? Oh, you like baseball? You know, so I just find that to be incredibly interesting.
Yeah.
And then not to ramble, but just on top of that, I think they're making a comment, right? You know, baseball went out of style because nobody had time for it. Mm-hmm. And I think that when I watch this episode now, that comment is even more poignant than it was when this came out, because the world has just sped up to the point where it's like, we all just kind of want to get off the carousel, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, before I comment on baseball, I want to say that if you were watching Star Trek back in 1993, like you said, people were like, oh, you're watching Star Trek, you're a geek. I would add that if you were still watching Deep Space Nine this far into season one, you were a special subset of those geeks.
It's true. It's true.
Were into Star Trek.
Because even some Star Trek fans were like, nah, not a fan.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. As for the baseball, I think that it was interesting that this was right around the time, I think it was a few years before actually the big baseball strike, which wasn't the first problem for baseball, but people were getting kind of down on baseball at the time this episode was written. I think that maybe Deep Space Nine was a wake-up call for Major League Baseball, because if you look at the game today, because of the various tweaks they've made to the game, you see scores like 15-12, right? Mm-hmm. It's a more exciting game than it was back then. And so maybe in that way, they have staved off the death of baseball as predicted in this episode. The Cisco connection, one thing that it says to me is how Cisco is very loyal people he cares about, to things that he cares about. It's just part of his character, because Buck Bokai says that when we played the final World Series, there were only 300 people in the stands. And Cisco says 301 in my version. And it's just a simple line, but the fact that he points it out is he's telling Buck Bokai, like, I'm there for you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that too, because I think what it does as well for Cisco is it in some ways it kind of shows him to be an analog person. There's, and we will see that throughout the rest of the series, is that Cisco is a person who's greatly connected to the history of the past, whether it's baseball, his history from Africa. You know, I mean, he is a person who truly appreciates in some ways the more Luddite view of things, but at the same time, he's not afraid to embrace the future. What's interesting and fascinating, as we're talking, I'm also seeing that this is the thing that is going to make Cisco especially relevant in accepting who he is as the emissary, because he's willing to accept things that other people just aren't. He's willing to be loyal and to love and see the value in things that people of this age can't. Mm-hmm. The idea of a Starfleet officer being beholden to a religion other than science is not known of, you know, unless you're a Klingon. No humans are, though. We've never seen humans, especially in the Next Generation era, that have any kind of religion. We saw that in the TOS era, right? Mm-hmm. They actually had a chapel on board the Enterprise.
Yeah, right.
But that, by this point, is gone. And so I find that to be incredibly interesting. And I think that, you know, when we look at Cisco's love of baseball and his devotion to it, his loyalty to it, I think we learn a lot about this character, and he's not willing to just throw the baby out with the bathwater. He's not somebody who's just going to be a chronological snob and say, everything we know now is all that really matters. We're the I Ching. Nothing else is poignant for us. Mm-hmm. No, the ancient wisdom and ancient things could still have value even today. Mm-hmm. And I just find that incredibly interesting then for his character and what we learn here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's, it is an interesting way to connect into the fact that the fact that he accepts that he is the emissary to the Bajoran people. One exception to humans on Star Trek, I will point out there, and it comes after this, but Chakotay, with his belief in the spirituality and his Native American ancestry, is something that is portrayed on Star Trek, but it is a very rare case, right, that we see any humans after the original series. And we don't really see it in the characters on the original series. There's just the fact that there is the chapel on the ship, and there's a few mentions here and there. And of course, that was largely because of the time period when that series was written versus TNG onward.
Sure.
But yeah, that's...
Well, and I mean, even Chakotay, yeah, though, isn't from Earth, right? His group of Native Americans live on a...
Oh, sure.
I mean, or yeah, Native... Yeah. I don't even know you would call them Americans at that point, but what you would call them, but they actually live, you know, on a different planet. So
sure.
It's,
yeah.
You know, they're not even necessarily on Earth anymore.
Sure. Yeah. But the origins, as
sure,
explained in Tattoo,
correct,
I believe,
yeah,
are back on Earth. So,
right.
Sure. So another thing to talk about here as we get closer to the end, the aliens themselves, they say they're on a mission to explore the galaxy. They also mention that they followed one of the Starfleet ships through the hole in space. So it suggests that they're based in the Gamma Quadrant, which I think kind of slips by in this story. But they're on a mission to explore the galaxy. They were fascinated by the imagination. And one thing that the Bukbokai alien says that... It always makes me stop when he says it. He says, this imagination of yours, we've never encountered anything like it. And I'm thinking, really? I think most humanoid aliens that we see in Star Trek, not all, but a majority of them have some sort of imagination. So I think because the crew is also mixed, they're not all humans. He's referring to humanoids having imagination, not just humans or Starfleet, but that line always gets me. But regardless, this is their way of exploring the galaxy. And going back to where no one has gone before at the beginning of TNG, you've got the idea of people bringing ships to them so they can explore the galaxy. Here's a case of aliens who are out there exploring the galaxy, but not making direct first contact, but observing the reactions of the aliens they meet to learn more about how their minds work and their cultures before they agree to make first contact. And then Sisko says he wants to learn more about them, and Bukbokai says, well, maybe next year. And then we never hear anything else about these aliens ever, and to my knowledge, they've never even appeared in the novels or the comics. So... let me, as I ramble on here, point out one more thing. I mentioned that Ready Room episode from about 10 years ago. Your esteemed co-host, John Mills from Aggressive Negotiations, was a guest on the episode discussion in that Ready Room. And he loves Star Trek V. And his headcanon, his speculation is that the god at the center of the galaxy in Star Trek V is one of these aliens. And that's why the galactic barrier wasn't really there. It was just in the crew's imagination. So anyway, over to you. What are your thoughts on these mysterious aliens?
Yeah, as I was watching the episode, one of the things I was thinking was, it's too bad that these aliens never came back, because I think that would have been a really fascinating thing for them to dive into more, and basically having to give us more of who they are. In some ways, I think... You know, we kind of see this type of thing, an observer effect. But this is, you know, the benevolence here with which they try to get to know us is really interesting. And that's through them bringing to life portions of our imagination so they can see how we react to the things that we think about and or imagine, which to me is an incredibly novel idea, right? And it's super fun. So yes, I wish there would have been a novel about it. I think that could have been a lot of interesting stuff for them to be able to mine. I also, you know, I love that idea from John of the Star Trek V alien being one of these aliens who's trapped on a planet, and that, you know, he wants to get off, and that's why he keeps trying to draw people in to bring him a starship and everything. And you know, his isolation is what's made him kind of crazy and mean. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a terrible idea too. And of course, it could also be almost everything that happens there is imagined as well. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's the beauty of this type of thing. There really was a lot to be mined, I think, here. Mm-hmm. With what had been created. And so, you know, I guess if they're just looking for great novel ideas for what to do, you know, we're going to get a Deep Space Nine story from Dayton Ward set between or just right before the first episode, Emissary, called Pliable Truths. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, this is a place where you could write a story inside the series where these aliens come back, right? You know, mm-hmm. So I'm and why not? Because this is the kind of stuff that I think really is incredibly fun to be able to play with. And it also is another place, I think, where you can write a book or a story that is fun, that it has a lot of frivolity and joy to it. And we can enjoy that as much as fans. As much as the stories that have, you know, major consequences for, mm-hmm. you know, the entire galaxy.
Yeah, definitely. I'm thinking that in Star Trek V, maybe William Shatner's imagination wasn't strong enough, and that's why there are no rock creatures, because if he could imagine them a little bit better, mm-hmm. the budget would have appeared just out of thin air, and they could have put those in there. So, yeah, I think that the approach these aliens have to first contact is interesting. And going all the way back to the beginning of our discussion, the first question that we discussed, is it familiar? Does it have a twist? You mentioned Observer Effect, which is an Enterprise episode where crew members are possessed by Organians to learn more about the crew. And this is a little bit, it's somewhat similar. It's also different because they're not being possessed here. They're just manifestations. But my first reaction in thinking about how these aliens approach first contact versus the Federation is that the general Starfleet approach is to charge in and say, hey, here we are. We're the Federation. We're cool. You should be our friends. Let's talk. And at the end of the episode here, Sisko asks Bokai, why didn't you just talk to us like this? But then I think about, in some cases, Starfleet does something a little bit more similar to this. In First Contact, the episode from TNG, Who Watches the Watchers, we see them going undercover. And there are, of course, other stories mm-hmm. where this happens as well. And Starfleet does something similar. They're just observing. They're not interacting. Now, here the aliens interact a lot more, which would be a difference. But I think it shows some differences and some similarities in mm-hmm. thinking, both in terms of caution on both sides, actually, because the aliens here, they're also protecting themselves, right? They don't want to just charge right. in and introduce themselves.
Well, and that's the kind of, I mean, this is what I think leaves them rife for exploration, is that there's just a lot here that we don't know about them. So what is their makeup? What would make them, you know, are they completely non-corporeal or mm-hmm. do they have any type of body? You know, I mean, at the end, there's so much here. And the beauty too is that what makes them so interesting is, If they are non-corporeal aliens, they don't come across like the Organians, you know, like mm-hmm. know-it-alls. They're truly mm-hmm. interested still in other species. So, yeah, I mean, I think there really is a lot of interesting stuff to be able to dig into with them, and it would be really fun to be able to see a take on them here in the future.
Yep, definitely. All right. Well, what are your final thoughts on this episode? And what's your rating for If Wishes Were Horses?
I mean, I think everybody can tell from listening to this that I really enjoy this episode. I had a blast actually rewatching it. I think it is a lot of fun. And it's one that I could kind of turn on at any point. You know, that's one of the nice things about this is that you don't have to be a part of a rewatch or anything. You can legit just turn this episode on and I think have a good time from start to finish anytime you want it. And so I would give it 4 out of 5 Daxes from my imagination.
What's the 5th Dax from your imagination doing right now?
Oh, I can't tell you that.
All right. Yeah, I also had a lot of fun rewatching this episode. I've watched it probably many more times than anyone really should. But it's a really fun episode. And if you want to dig deeper, like we did today, there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. But you don't have to. You can just watch it for the fun, the Rumpelstiltskin, the baseball. And it's a great episode, I feel. And if you want to hear more thoughts on it and thoughts from others as well, the Ready Room that I mentioned a couple times in our discussion today is episode 151. The title is, of course, Please Refrain from Using Your Imagination. And it was recorded about 10 years ago. So if you want to go back and find it and check it out, there's some points we brought up here, but a lot that we didn't in there. And yeah, I'm just glad they have fun with the story. And what I like about this too, you mentioned earlier that this shows that in Star Trek, you can have fun. Everything doesn't have to be super serious. I like that this series remembers that even later on when we get into the really deep stuff and the war and all, you still have some fun episodes like this, including one involving baseball. Oh, and speaking of the baseball, as we always have to point out when we mention this episode, there is a new character born in this episode, and that is Sisko's baseball, which becomes an important part of the DS9 story, and this is where he gets it, from Buck Bokai. And I love that little bit about this story as well. So I'm going to give this one 7 Gunji Jackdaws running through the promenade. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on If Wishes Were Horses. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Baywell Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're already a member, you know how it works. If you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post on the timeline for this episode. You can leave your comments for Matthew and me there, and also for fellow listeners. Get a conversation going. You can also send us email if you prefer. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb. And that will follow one of those Starfleet ships right through that hole in space, right to Matthew and me. You can also find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not following 4 out of 5 Jadzias around the station, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network outside of this show, you can find me in the 602 Club talking about all those franchises outside of Star Trek that we love. Of course, doing Warp 5, Literary Treks, The Artificial Tango, and Saddle Up with you, Chris. So you can find all of those as well. And then overall on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me in that show that Chris mentioned with John Mills, Aggressive Negotiations. We talk about Star Wars. And then on Owl Post with Drea Kaufman, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. Now, Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out how to get Quark into jail, where can people find you?
I just have to use my imagination, Matthew. It's not difficult. I don't need to spend a lot of time on it. Anything's possible on the imagination station. But yeah, when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, doing all those shows with you. You can also find me in the back catalog on many, many episodes of many shows over the past 14 years. And if you'd like to talk about Star Trek, you can find me in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Twitter's where I'm most active, but I'd love to hear from you wherever you are. And if you'd like to help us keep the orb, this rewatch, everything we're doing on the network going. We could definitely use your help. It takes a great deal of money to produce and distribute these podcasts. So if you'd like to get involved and keep the network going, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. I'd like to send a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us now. We would not be here without you. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next time when we're going to be paid a visit by a very special person from Beta Z.
Well, Chris, I can't wait for that. But thank you so much for joining us. And we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.